From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
After the landmark Brown versus Board of Education decision in 1954 that desegregated America's public schools, the schools in New Castle County, Delaware, were split into four districts to make sure they were integrated. What happened next has a lot to do with something that came up recently on the presidential campaign trail.
And I'm going to now direct this at Vice President Biden.
During the last Democratic debate, California Senator Kamala Harris forced frontrunner and former Vice President Joe Biden to defend his controversial stance on busing. When he was a U.S. Senator in Delaware, he worked with segregationist senators to stop court-ordered busing as a tool for desegregation in the 1970s.
There was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools, and she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education.
New Castle County's busing program was once held up as a model of racial balance. But did it achieve what it was designed to do? Today on The Why, still separate, still unequal. We spoke to Delaware law professor Leland Ware, who recently wrote a book about the history of school segregation, race, and class, to help us learn more. So, Professor Ware, Delaware was home to one of five segregation cases that eventually became the landmark Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954. Can you describe that case?
There were actually two cases, one involving Claymont and the other involved Hockessin, which were at the time small towns, but of course are now suburban areas. And they were part of a nationwide coordination of cases in which the NAACP lawyers decided to directly challenge segregation. In both Claymont and Hockessin, there were these one-room, dilapidated, deteriorated schools and rural schools. And in the case of Hockessin, the parent watched the school bus pass her house every day, and she was just upset about that, and she wanted to actually just to get a bus to take her child to school. But eventually she decided to challenge segregation directly. And the same thing happened in Claymont as well.
And so we know, obviously, what happened, you know, in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. What happened in Delaware specifically as a result of that ruling that ended segregation?
With the Brown case itself, it resulted in the immediate desegregation of the schools in Wilmington. New Castle County had about 10 different school districts. And so Wilmington was the largest, most populous one. And there were some efforts to incorporate some of the other districts into Wilmington, but the legislature passed a law to prevent that.
But then, in 1978, by court order, the county moved to what was called the 9-3 plan. Under the plan, Wilmington students were bused to suburban schools for 9 years, and suburban students were bused to city schools for 3 years.
So how did families feel about this plan when the courts implemented it?
I mean, the suburban parents were quite upset, and the city parents had mixed emotions about it.
Why?
Long distances, long bus rides. Some of the white suburban families were afraid for their children to be in Wilmington, which they perceived as being kind of dangerous. So I think the thrust of it, though, was that the suburban parents objected to their children going to schools with blacks in the city of Wilmington.
As this plan was in place, how did that experiment go from the perspective of families and students?
Black students were segregated within white schools because they were put on the remedial track There's documented that they disproportionate discipline for black kids. So black kids were penalized far more harshly than white students.
So the 9-3 plan was imposed to achieve integration. Did it meet that goal?
The answer is yes. And Delaware at one point had one of the most integrated school systems, at least racially balanced, I should say.
The busing plan stayed in place through the 90s when the state decided it had achieved its goal of racial balance. In 2000, Delaware passed the Neighborhood Schools Act, which required students to go to the school closest to their home unless there was some kind of hardship.
What happened, you know, when that act went into effect?
Well, the schools started resegregating. Because of neighborhood segregation in the U.S., which remains very high in every large city, so that if students attended the schools closest to their homes, they would be mostly all black or mostly all white. Because in urban metropolitan communities, such as Philadelphia or Washington, D.C., or you name it, Atlanta, they all still have extraordinarily high levels of racial segregation.
This is The Why.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall. We're talking to Delaware Law Professor Leland Ware about the state's history of busing. So was this period a success? It depends on who you ask. Leland Ware thinks there's little evidence that black students made significant gains.
You know, I don't think it significantly improved the academic performance of black students. There was and is evidence that black kids are just not faring as well in academically in integrated schools. The problems that black students have is that it's a class issue, that they live in low-income, racially isolated communities with high levels of crime, lots of distractions.
But veteran education reporter Dale Mezzacapa says despite the problems, black students did benefit from busing.
So this led essentially to higher achievement. Test scores were one thing. The racial achievement gap, which is persistent and nationwide, narrowed during those years in Delaware. Black student test scores went up. There were issues, but certainly that was one benefit that occurred.
Professor Ware, when you look back at the attempts that have been made to achieve racial balance in public schools, how do you look back on busing? Do you see that as a successful model or one that didn't achieve much?
I supported busing. I thought it was one of many tools to achieve desegregation. But I do think, based on my research, that busing was not as successful as people hoped it would be. It worked in some places and not in others. So I would say it's mixed at best.
You know, there's a lawsuit right now moving through the courts in neighboring New Jersey that's essentially arguing that neighborhood segregation results in what you said, results in de facto school segregation. If that lawsuit is successful, do you see any kind of broader effects in places like Wilmington that are grappling with this issue all over again?
There are all sorts of legal mechanisms, you know, to fight neighborhood segregation, but it persists. So I would say that middle-class African Americans are moving rapidly or have been moving to the suburbs for at least 20 or more years, but leaving behind kind of low-income people who are racially isolated and mostly poor, by the way, struggling in the inner city.
So what's it going to take, Professor? What's it going to take to achieve equity for students in these racially isolated communities?
You know, again, I think it's just not, can't be solved within the confines of the schools. I mean, there is a lawsuit and they want to have more resources allocated to these high poverty schools And that certainly would be a help. And I think they do need more attention and more resources. In the case of inner city neighborhoods, it's a combination of race and class and disadvantage. So they combine together to create this negative outcome. The question is, will these students have equal, or can these students have equal access to equal educational opportunities? That's the real deal. And so having them sit next to a white student, which is the message, by the way, that sends, simply, you know, that's a very superficial and too superficial measure to determine educational success.
I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much, Professor Ware, for talking to us
today.
Thank
you, Professor Ware.
It's been my pleasure. I hope that helps.
The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And me, Annette John Hall.
Along with Alex Stern, and with editorial direction from Katie Colinari.
Tweet me at AnnetteJH.
And at Shai Ben-Yaakov.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.